Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with our episode 8 recap. Alexa's making a face, which makes it seem like my audio probably sucks. I still don't really have access to a microphone because the internet here just isn't good enough. So I'm doing this all from my phone. Alexa, your face hasn't changed. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I was told not to do anything with my hands. So instead, I'm just making a weird face because your voice sounded a little weird. But yeah, we are working with different equipment in quarantine. Neither Phil nor I are where we usually are. My microphone is broken and Phil is on a cell phone. So we're doing the best we can. We're trying to get you guys, you know, the best content that we can. I'm still hearing a little clicking when I'm talking, but I guess we will work through it.
Everybody tell us who it's coming from, if it's coming from me or from Alexa. This way we can actually pinpoint it. This is like our own version of trying to find the problem here. Who's patient? Alexa. So, but
it's
that
not
was. Oh, okay. So I love this. I was just about to say. So I have the chat up over here on my right, and I was just about to say that was a great, great episode of TV. And like one of the first comments in the chat is week. It's like, thank you, appreciate that. I thought it was great.
I think if Adam goes home, then it's weak because the whole edit was just like, Adam's gone. And the whole time we're like, oh my God, Jeremy just like whipped these votes. Like, you have power and you have individual immunity, but he is like killing it. And then he ends up being wrong. But as Phil told me via Wikipedia, because we obviously didn't find out at the end of the episode, it was Michelle, Wendell, and Nick who voted for Adam. So I originally thought Michelle was BSing Nick. And, you know, you see Jeremy with his head in his hands, but that's really good play by Jeremy sticking with the group. That was really smart.
Yeah, and we'll end up seeing, too, what Michelle's reasoning was, because tonight she was invisible just much like she was in the first episode. So she didn't really say anything the entire time. She votes against Wendell. She tells Nick she didn't know about it, but did she really not know about it? I don't know if she really did not know about it or if she's just saying, look, Wen, I voted with you, because now you're in the jury management phase. If it's 9-3 and you're Michelle and you don't really think you're a threat and your name's not coming up, vote with Wendell. See if you can just be like, I was blindsided, and then try to steal his vote at the end as well. Nick definitely was the one who looked a lot more hurt than this, than Michelle did. Michelle did not come out of this looking all that beat up, though, of course, you know, she didn't vote the right way. So that's beside the point. And that really is, that's the end of the episode. Whereas everything before this, I thought was awesome. This reminded me of old school Survivor. It was like, I'm watching season 2 now, and I just watched the Varner boot in season 2. The back-to-back scoop and falls in the fire, Varner goes home. Back-to-back, like, Survivor history right there with Jeff Varner and Mike Scoopin. But
wow.
Yeah. So I'm watching this episode, and it kind of felt like that old school vibe. We'll talk all about the Edge of Extinction challenge, but just the way they kept going back and forth, like it was just instinct, not even necessarily strategy. It was just, who do we want to be with? And I have to give props to the editors in this episode, because I will say that one of the best edited things in a long time was the way Nick was just sneaking up on people. And that last one, the punchline of it all, when Jeremy and Ben are talking to each other and Nick just comes walking in from off screen. The absolute best. I have not been that happy watching him. I was really like punching. I was laying in a bed watching. I was punching the bed. I was laughing so hard.
And the reason that one is so good is because, like, my brother, who only watches Survivor once in a while, he's like, they are just gassing this Nick kid. And it's so good because there was the compilation of Nick, like, just like entering conversations, which is so incredibly funny. And then you move on and then it comes back. Like, you almost forgot that they did it. It was so good. And that one, Nick didn't even enter the conversation. He just like walks, speaks, and then continues walking.
It was amazing.
So, so, so funny.
And that's what I loved about it. It was like, it's getting to the point where it's weird. We don't know when he's going to show up. We don't know why he's going to show up, any of that. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, he literally just, I'm going to go get some water. And it's like, why are you here? Where did you come from? I love it. I think it's great.
It was fantastic. But yeah, Nick had a tough episode. And you see Jeremy like being able to adapt out of that. But it seems like no one's ever really been like Nick's number one. Like, Nick's kind of had, I guess it was Wendell, but Nick's been thrown under the bus a couple episodes now. So, and now we're seeing the next episode. He's coming in guns a-blazing.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. Like, I guess that's what he has to do. Like, he has to come in now and just be like, okay, who did this to me? Because now he's lost his two biggest allies in the game back-to-back weeks. That's not an easy thing to overcome, no matter who you are at this game or how small of a threat you are, like he is. Like, that's just not an easy thing to overcome at all. So I think you have to come out and take it pretty personally, you know, coming into next week. So I don't know. Based on how this was shown tonight, I feel like really Nick is the only one who's going back this week. After this tribal, I feel like Nick's the only one who's going back, who's like, oh my God, I can't believe this just happened. I know people are going to say that's me being a Michelle Homer. I'm not being a Michelle Homer. Just look at the difference in the reactions when that vote happened. Michelle smiled at Nick and then said, oh, I didn't know about it. Like, I think she knew about it, was actually kind of happy to see Wendell go home. I don't know. It's a weird situation, but I do think Nick's making the right move here. He's got to come out guns blazing because he can no longer play this, oh, hunky-dory, everything's going to be fine game. He has to come out and go crazy.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess interesting timing, but Dalton Ross just came out with the merge interview with Wendell, and Wendell gives his whole side of the Michelle story. And it's kind of what we'd all been thinking, that they were working together for a very long time. So Wendell ends up giving Michelle his fire token. So clearly there's enough of a relationship there. And Michelle is rich. Michelle has five.
Finally, after I made that huge claim a couple weeks ago that she had five and then she ended up not having five, she finally does have five. So now we can finally put that in here with the with our prop bet game. Michelle has five fire tokens, and that is official. Wendell, I think, did the right thing here. He doesn't know who betrayed him. He doesn't know if Jeremy did. He doesn't know if Nick did or whatever. So you kind of just give it to Nick and Michelle because you're not sure. And again, like, this goes back to what I was just saying. Like, Nick looks really hurt by this. Michelle doesn't look as hurt. She gets Wendell's fire token, though. And who knows? I mean, like, look, we're not going to know until next week. We might not know. Maybe Michelle turns into an invisible player post-merge. She turns into that Ken Cole, whatever his name is, role, where he just goes from being a huge, huge personality to now all of a sudden he's nothing. Like, we could see that happen feasibly in a returning season. We saw it happen. We mentioned Scoopin earlier. Happened with Scoopin in Philippines. He had a huge first episode and then had, like, six episodes in a row where he didn't say a thing. So, we might never know what Michelle's thinking here was. But for some reason, I feel that she knew what was going on because she has good relationships with Jeremy and she has good relationships with other players. But she knew that had she voted for Wendell, she had a better chance of maybe getting a fire token and possibly getting his thing at the end of the game.
It appears that she does have four. I thought she had five. I saw multiple people on Twitter post that, but I did not check my sources. So if she actually has four, that is my bad.
How does she have four now? When did she spend one before?
Well, she has Wendell's.
Yeah, no, but so did she.
She has hers.
Oh, I guess that's right. Yeah, somebody had tweeted that she had five, so there you go.
All right, that's what we get for not checking our sources, kids. She has four,
but
she's going to vote someone out, and they're going to give her fire tokens. You heard it here. Oh, because she gave it to Wendell. That'll do it.
And Wendell gave it right back. Her.
That was so incredibly nice of him.
Well, somebody else can't count. It wasn't us. Who was it? Was it Andy Vogel or was it Brandon?
Yeah. I'm not completely convinced that Michelle knew, because we see it be Sophie had an interesting episode tonight, but we see Sophie being the one that says, oh no, I don't necessarily want it to be Nick. I think it should be Wendell. So what, like, you know, we didn't, and this was all, and again, Sophie narrated this perfectly. She's like, all the big guys are getting together. And that's exactly what she did. She shot directly at there. So she saw that. And again, great. I think great on Tony. Tony did a really good job of wanting to work with those guys. Good on Ben. And it ended up being good on Jeremy. I mean, Jeremy wanted Wendell, but ends up sticking with the larger group, which is the right move.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is Tony's kind of coming out party. We're finally going to start to see the real Tony again. This was, the merge, you know, everybody always says you break the season into two different it's two different seasons, essentially. Whatever happened pre-merge normally doesn't matter post-merge, and then post-merge is this whole new thing. I think Tony now, he's made it to this point, and I think now he's just going to come in guns a-blazing. And I think he did a really good job with this vote. And I think everybody did a good job with this vote of officially siding, you know what, we're going to get rid of Wendell here. Because, like, if you're Jeremy, you're Tony, you still have other big threats keeping them in the game. To try to push against people just to keep Wendell this early... Why do you want to cause like a 7-5 rift already when there's so much game left to be played and you know that there's so many advantages that are going to come to fruition? Like, it's just so, it's too much. And you just don't want, you don't want to cause too much of a rift. Making it 9-3, fine. Leave Nick and Michelle out. Who cares? Goodbye. Whatever. You can be the next two boots. But if it suddenly becomes a 7-5 type thing, I was trying to figure it out while I was watching, Alexa. Maybe you can help me with this because I have no idea, although we did just think she had five, but that was because I read. It was Tony, Wendell, Jeremy, Ben. Those were the four. Who else did they think they had that they would have been able to vote out Nick or Adam rather than voting out Wendell? Like, how were they going to get the numbers to be 7-5? I was really confused.
I think it was just the bouncing. It's like, I think they thought they could grab Denise. I think they probably thought that they could grab Sophie. But that's the thing. We don't really see any of them. We only see Jeremy kind of talking to everybody. And you see Ben with the girls briefly. But, you know, maybe Ben could have said, okay, I have Sophie and Sarah. You probably see a little bit of that, but I think Jeremy has no allegiance to Denise. That was made pretty clear tonight. So I don't know. I think they probably, I forget who's the one who said it. It was either Kim or Sophie, but they were like, oh, is it just going to be the consensus boot? Like, I think it's one of those things where like nobody wanted to throw the name out. So as long as someone threw another name out, everyone would be like, okay, yeah, I'm down with Nick or Wendell or Adam.
Yeah, so, and then it became Adam because all of a sudden it was like, well, we really like Adam's sketchy. Why do we need Adam? And I mean, let's say this now. I thought Adam, this is something I know we have right. Adam's voting confessional was incredible. And when he
Adam's voting confessional is incredible.
That was not his voting confessional.
That was his just incredible regular confessional.
Oh, that was amazing.
I stared directly at my brother and I was like, how many times have you done that to me in our entire life?
I know, because it's the easiest way to be like, you're mature. No, you're mature. but that confessional where he walked up there and he said, I know it's between you or it's between you and me tonight. I know that, but do you? Like, that again, and I will always say Adam's an incredibly underrated Survivor player because everybody wants to just like crap on Adam whenever they can. But that shows that even if Adam had gone home tonight, he had enough of his finger on the pulse to know that. And Wendell didn't see this coming. And I'm not saying Wendell's a bad winner by any means. If you listen to if you're a patron, you know how much we respect Wendell's game. We just did our Alliance bracket and him and Dom went quite far. But you know, when you sit down and you look at the differences here is Adam never feels comfortable. And this is the time in his game in Millennials vs. Gen X when he was really in danger of going home. Like, this is when the tail, like, okay, it was the easy boot to get rid of Michelle, or maybe it wasn't easy there, but they get rid of Michelle, and then him and Taylor kind of go off and do their thing, and it kind of puts him in a little bit of hot water. Not that he was ever going to go over Taylor, but it still put Adam in hot water. And he knows that again. And so for him to be paranoid, I get it. Wendell just got too comfortable here, and maybe that's how you have to be. We heard people say it tonight. You know, I want to keep making sure, but at the same time, I don't want to be the person who it's like, oh, well, we don't know if you can be sure, so let's keep him around. Like, I don't know. It's just like, where do you draw this line, you know?
Well, I think that's a huge positive of Adam's game, because how many people do we see go home every single season because they're confident? If you're never confident, then that means you're paying attention. So I think that's always going to be a huge positive of Adam's game. But someone who was confident and had absolutely every reason to be is the one person who came back from the edge of extinction without an idol. Let's talk about this.
Yes, yes, yes. So there's so much we have to talk about with Edge of Extinction here. First of all, good on Tyson. Very good on Tyson, because Tyson, to be able to lay low enough without having an idol, and nobody even really said, oh, we're so worried that Tyson might have an idol. Like, nobody even really, that didn't come up in conversation tonight. People weren't throwing Tyson's name around. Tyson doesn't get a single vote. I think that's really awesome. You know, good for him. But when I like when I see how he was able to navigate that without having an idol, that shows like how adaptable Tyson is, which some of these old school players really show that they weren't as adaptable, where Tyson has played so many different iterations of Survivor that he now can come out here and instead of doing the Rick Devins, I'm going to try to control what's going on here, he can kind of do the I'm going to lay low and let the other big targets just fight over each other and make silly little jokes. When they were talking about Wendell's chest hair, that was freaking hilarious. When
that was awesome.
That wasn't there yesterday. That was amazing. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. But it's Tyson, you know, laying low but still being Tyson. And that's a really hard thing to do.
It is really hard, especially after that challenge, because he and Rob did great. But I guess before we go backwards to the challenge, someone just made a good point in the chat, and this is another a point that my mom made when I was watching. It's great having like commentary now because I usually watch alone. Now I'm with three other people. But, you know, no one likes Edge of Extinction. So if Tyson gets the end, are they going to vote for him? I don't think they would. So no. I think it was Sophie who said that at Tribal Council where she was like, you know, we're not concerned about him. And if Tony said the reason we voted him out is completely irrelevant to what's going on right now. So I'm really curious to see how this evolves for Tyson and whoever comes back at the final six. I feel like they're almost just going to be not regarded.
I would especially think that for the person coming back at final six. See, the difference here with Tyson is he got voted out at, what, 16th place? Was that right, or is it 17th?
It's one of those. Someone tell us. I don't know.
Yeah, I forget exactly where he got voted out. But whenever he got voted out, he comes back in. It was the same thing as Devins. Voted out on day 11, comes back into the game, wins his way back in. And now Tyson could do a lot of work. And I'm not saying Tyson's going to win. I don't think Tyson has a chance in hell to win, because I don't think they're going to vote for somebody who got voted out. But I think he has a lot better chance of getting votes if he does get to the end because of when he came in. I don't think the person who comes in at final six has a chance to get any votes except for like Amber and Natalie, if it's somebody who comes in very early, or Danny, you know, if you're just like, these are the only three people I know, of course I want to give them the money.
Mm-hmm.
But with Tyson, he has so much room to play. And then again, this could be somebody who knocks you down from six figures to five figures if you're sitting at the end next to him. Because if Tyson does go on a crazy good run, and they keep him around too long, he's definitely a threat to win challenges like crazy, which we'll talk about the challenge today. I'm surprised he didn't win the community. But, you know, he's a threat to win challenges. And then he could win, get to final three, take some votes from somebody else who wasn't voted out of the game. And now all of a sudden you go from winning $100,000 or whatever the second place prize is going to be this year to getting third place and not getting nearly as much. That's something that I think these people are going to be taking into consideration, because we saw Rick Devins pretty much be guaranteed a win if he gets the final three in Edge of Extinction. If that's the case, Tyson might not be guaranteed a win, but he's guaranteed some votes, even though he's voted out of the game.
Because everyone does like him. I think everyone on the edge likes him. I think everyone on the edge is his friend. And people playing the game, they're all eating each other. And now he's the one old schooler just still hanging around. And he played it. He won a new school. I don't even know what school he won, but new-ish school season.
Yeah, he did. I was just gonna say let's do the challenge, but do you have anything
to say? Do you want to talk about the immunity challenge, or you want to talk about the Edge of Extinction challenge?
I want to talk about Edge of Extinction. Look, this was an epic challenge, and I'm not going to take away from the challenge yet, but I'm going to take away from the challenge eventually, so everybody be warned about that. But that was awesome between Tyson and Rob. I thought that was
so good.
Yeah,
so good. But a question that I have is, why did the people who have multiple fire tokens not use as many as they could? Why did Natalie not use all three? Why did Rob not use three? I don't know.
I think in terms of the advantage, you could only get one advantage in the challenge.
I
was just going to say, I think you can only get one in the challenge, and then it was a matter of, do you want to buy an idol or something for later? I don't know if Rob's idol actually counts for anything now. Like, I don't know if he actually has an idol, like, or if it's just gone and he lost the three fire tokens by kind of gambling on himself.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. I bet they keep it. Idol just goes into oblivion, but I'm sure he can probably sell it to somebody.
I don't know if he'll be able to sell it to somebody, but I think it's definitely his because he paid the three tokens. It's just going to be a matter of, is he going to get back into the game?
Useless unless he's back in the game.
Yeah, and I did like this more than what we saw in 38, where like you actually had to think about it, am I going to use my fire tokens to try to get back in the game or to try to get an idol once I'm back in the game, even though that might not actually do me any good? Because Tony even says, oh no, the prices went up and I'm a little poor man in my bodega and can't buy anything.
I loved that.
Like, that was amazing. But like when you look at how if the prices are going to go up, you have to take the chance being on edge. Do you think you're really going to get back in and do you want to buy an idol? And so, you know, you buy the idol and hope. And then if you don't get back in, I think you still keep the idol. It's just the idol is not useful to you until you're actually back in the game, which now you only have one more chance to get back in.
Mm-hmm. And Amber just giving him her fire token. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, it's not crazy, but it's just like, oh man, I wish I had a significant other on the island with me. That was so helpful.
And yeah. She knew she had no chance of getting back in. So it was like, here you go, Rob. Yeah. Good luck.
I guess that's the only place in that challenge where there can be an advantage, unless I don't know if this would be too much of an advantage, but maybe you could start the ball higher up on the snake. But what was your issue with the challenge? I never like the you have to make a long pole and get the key, but
I guess it wasn't so much
the crawling. The beginning I thought was cool, but like crawling down and untying, that looked really tough.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't so much the challenge. It was the fact of the people who could get advantages. And this is a huge complaint I'm going to have, and Dalton tweeted about it, but it went through my head before that anyway. Yule and Parvati never had a chance to get an advantage because they lasted longer in the game.
Right.
They were punished for playing better Survivor. They were punished, and Yule was still in that challenge. And granted, also, when you see Boston Rob pick up the ball, he's picking up two balls. There were two balls to the challenge, just like there were in Edge of Extinction. It's just we only saw one of them. But there were two balls here. So I don't know if other people had a ball. We don't really know what was going on. I'm sure they would have shown us that if they were.
Everyone had one except for Boston Rob. He had five.
Yeah, exactly. But so when you look at this, Yule got there the night before and is punished by not being able to get an advantage here. And yeah. I think, like, look, that's like, I'm never going to like it's Survivor. It is what it is. But I just have a real problem that he had to give up his fire token to somebody else while everybody else who had been voted out earlier was able to acquire fire tokens just by completing a task that all of them completed or be able to run from one end of the trail to the other end of the trail. Everybody had the opportunity, and Parvati and Yule, Parvati did have the opportunity. She wasn't able to get them. Boston Rob got them. But Yule never had a chance. And that's kind of bogus because that delayed him a lot and he was still in the challenge.
Yeah, Yule could have won that challenge, I think, if Tyson didn't have that advantage, or Rob either. That's a really good point. I'm really curious to watch fire tokens, assuming they do them, in a season that doesn't have Edge of Extinction, because the more that we're talking it out, being on the Edge of Extinction for longer is a benefit, which is such bullshit. So I think I'm liking fire tokens, but I'm not liking that one, that there are more than 20, because now like everyone's trading them around. And now every time you win an individual immunity, you're going to get a fire token.
Don't
think I like that. So I want there to just be 20. And it's like, and this is someone who knows literally nothing about economics, so please bear with me. But like true currency, you can't just like make more and give it to everybody. You have to work with what is already in existence. So I would,
as America gives $2 trillion to everybody.
Yeah, $2 trillion to literally everybody. Well, there's not a pandemic on Fiji, but that is what I think I'm not loving, that you lose fire tokens, but then you can gain them. Like, I just hate Edge of Extinction so much.
Yeah, and look, like the whole Wiggler thing, like I think like, he said Edge of Extinction is not going to come back, whatever. But like, I'm looking at the chat here and Logchi doesn't like my soapboxes, but hey man,
Phil's been on a soapbox for the 5 years he's been doing this podcast.
Yeah, that's why I did this.
Let him talk. It's a thing.
I got tired of everybody else's moronic opinions and I wanted my own.
My own moronic opinion.
But then he says they might not buy an advantage, but they've had more food, so they get more energy. Tyson was eating a jar of peanut butter. Like
Tyson was eating a jar of peanut butter bigger than like a dog. That thing is freaking huge.
So like Yule didn't really like, okay, maybe he had a little bit more here and there, but like he still had to like, he didn't have more food necessarily. Like we don't know that for sure. He definitely didn't have more food than Tyson. Tyson had more food. So I don't know. Like I think that this whole thing, like, and plus, like, if that's your only little advantage, you stayed in the game longer, so you got to eat a little bit more food, and then somebody else literally doesn't have to dig something up. That's, I mean, that seems not really fair to me. So I don't know. I just think that, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see Edge of Extinction again, but I know Dalton Ross is definitely asking Jeff Probst that in his EW thing. So I want to read those questions when he does ask them, because I'm curious what Jeff's answer is going to be on that. Because, you know, Yule made it to third or to 12th place and then, you know, didn't have anything that he could buy an advantage with while everybody else did. So I kind of feel for him. And that may be why we didn't hear from Yule tonight, because Yule probably was bitching about that.
Yule was probably pissed. I feel like angry Yule is so hard to come by. I would love to see more of him. But let's get to the other challenge, which was super stationary and super wet. That is the literal worst challenge to have in a downpour. That is, you can't plan for that, but man, that's tough.
Yeah, I don't, I was surprised how fast Tyson fell in this, but everything else, it was a real, like, I love this challenge. I always find this challenge to be terrifying. I mean, the way Michelle fell, that's what I'm expecting every time. I'm like, when is somebody going to break their leg? And even Jeff being like, do you need medical? And she goes, no. He's like, are you sure? Because yeah. That looked
terrible. It's like, you can't stand up, Michelle.
And like, why can't you like put that like maybe half the size? So people right. can't fall as far. Like, that's really a dangerous, even Adam, like, I'm so scared. I hate heights. I'd be crap my pants up there.
I think it was in Game Changers, Andrea took a fall from like pretty much the top, like same as Michelle. And that looked horrible. And I think Sarah took a big jump. And again, with this, there's no control because it's so slippery that you kind of like, I think it was Sarah who's coming down. She's just sliding and like just jumped off because she didn't have another option. So that thing is absolutely horrible.
Well, and
one or two, like if you're up at the top and then you move down, it's like, you're really just moving for the sake of like moving your limbs. Like it only gets worse when you go down.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sand, because it was also raining, the sand's not going to be as soft
right.
as it is when it's not raining. And it's not going to be as piled there because you've already been standing there. So it's more packed down. That could not have felt good for any of them. Although it did lead to one of the best moments of Adam 100% needlessly putting Michelle's arm over his shoulder while she just walked. And he's acting like he's coming out of the war. That was so funny. I freaking loved that.
Hey, Adam with the social game. Yeah, I'm curious how much time went in between Michelle falling and Adam falling. I think Michelle, I mean, with those kind of challenges, it's like she fell. She can take all the time that she wants to like get up and get to the bench. There's no rush there.
There's nowhere to go.
But at least for the women, the people lasted longer who I expected. Like, this is a challenge that Denise is always going to win. This is a challenge that Kim's going to do really well in. Sophie did really well. Nick held his own there. I was impressed.
I was impressed too. I was surprised. I mean, I figured he wasn't going to beat Jeremy because Jeremy just has that man strength that's just hard to overcome.
That dad strength.
He really does. And being a firefighter and all that stuff. Like, I just feel like, you know, there was no way Jeremy was going down. But I was impressed with Nick for as long as Nick held on. Denise as well. We'll come back to this challenge, but what did you think about Denise at the merge feast telling everybody how she voted Sandra out of the game? And do you think people are still going to look at her as a threat, or was that kind of to put a little bit of drama into her winning this immunity?
I think it had a little bit of, you know, putting the drama into her winning immunity. The thing is, at first glance, I'm like, oh my God, why is she giving this in such explicit detail? But she can't lie. Every single person who was there. And I also, quick side tangent, have you ever seen a merge feast where it's like a full group conversation? Like, so many times you see little side conversations. Everyone's like, all right, Denise, like, how are you doing? Like, Wendell, how is Sele? So weird. So I think if you're Denise, like, there's no other option. Because Kim and Tony were completely voted against her, and she ended up saving Jeremy. It almost made, like, you know, they cut to Jeremy and he looked kind of awkward because he was like, yeah, I voted for her, and she casually didn't mention that. But I don't know what else she could have done, because I think it would have been so much worse if she lied. I am a little nervous for her next week, just because I don't really know. Her and Adam, it seems like they got back together, but I don't know if Adam... I don't know how much clout Adam has, and I don't really know how much clout Denise has, because clearly Jeremy's not really with her. I just don't really know who she's with, and that always is going to happen at the merge. I have no idea who's with who. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think she's going to be okay. This was interesting, though, what you said. Have we ever seen this kind of just open conversation like that? We really haven't. And that kind of goes to what happened at Tribal when it was nobody was saying anything. Adam said nobody was talking about anything. And I thought that was really interesting. What I think ultimately, though, because Jeremy gave up Wendell tonight, Jeremy needs Denise now. Because now there's only so many threats. You have Jeremy, you have Tony, Ben, who's lumping himself in there, which I'm sure is making Survivor Reddit go crazy over that. But I do believe that Ben is much more of a threat now than he is pre-merge, because now he can just go on his idol streaks or whatever he wants to do, and he can be really dangerous. I mean, we saw how dangerous he is post-merge. So I think now he definitely is a threat. But you have Ben, Jeremy, Tony, who seem like they're together. Throw Sarah in there. They need Denise, and they're still down 6. Or then you have Tyson, and then it's 6-5. You know what I mean? Like, you need Denise, though. If you don't have Denise, you just left Nick out of the vote, who's really pissed at you. Adam is only going to go where other people go. I don't think he's going to want to play with the threats the entire time, because he knows it. Michelle's not going to play with them the entire time, although Michelle and Jeremy were very tight at the beginning of this game. So don't forget that, because it was also her who said, let's just go for Adam then. You know, so the two of them were very tight at the beginning of the game. But I think they ultimately are going to need Denise. And now Denise can be viewed as a big threat. So if you were looking for who's our sixth biggest threat in the game, and I'm using sixth biggest very loosely here, but if you're saying who's your sixth biggest threat in the game, it's Denise, I think 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And someone just made a point in the chat that Denise has Kim. Again, we're seeing like nothing of Kim, except, you know, Kim's good in challenges, but we've all known that. But yeah, I think I'm really curious to see what happens with Denise. I think you're right. I think she will kind of fall backwards. I think this is actually putting a huge target on Jeremy's back, like you were just saying. I think him winning immunity, and, you know, he's only saying this to his allies, so this isn't a fault of his, but he's making it abundantly clear what his strategy is. And the meat shield strategy, like, he advertised that as his, but it's interesting that we're seeing it so much from his perspective, because I don't know. I think it's almost putting more of a target on his back, that he's like, here's exactly what I want to do, and you are who I can hide behind. That is making me really nervous for him.
I think it's making me nervous too. Jeremy tonight took a little too much control. And remember, like, this is when he got in trouble the season he was voted out. And I keep bringing up, when were people in trouble the seasons they got voted out? And Jeremy, this is when he got in trouble. Josh went home first. And then it was, oh, I'm fine now. And then Jeremy goes home immediately after that. And it's always around this time. This is when Adam was in trouble. And also, I want to say that Tyson, I believe, purposely lost this challenge today. I really do believe that. Because remember, in Token Chains, he won this challenge. Didn't need to win it because Joe ended up getting medevac. And then went home 2 votes later because he was seen as too big of an immunity threat. So I really, really, really do worry, or I really do believe that Tyson threw this, purposely lost this, jumped down as early as he could, give yourself a low profile. Whereas Jeremy is kind of giving himself a higher profile now. And not only saying, am I looking to hide behind meat shields, I'm also somebody who should be your meat shield, which, while that sounds great and all, there are still a lot of threats in the game. There's still enough of those, what were they calling, the hyenas out there of Michelle, Adam, even Denise to an extent, Nick, Sophie. There's still enough hyenas out there to eat up people like Jeremy. And Jeremy coming out of tonight looks like the biggest threat.
This hyenas and lions thing is, this is like the pilots and passengers. Like, this is going for a really long time. And I'm curious to see, and it's always Tony is narrating it, so I guess I'm curious to see where Tony ends up throughout this, but he's been really right about it. But I think you're right. I didn't even think about that with Tyson until you see, like, you know, they're doing the drone shot, and Tyson and Jeff goes, oh, well, Tyson won this last time, and Tyson drops, like, kind of quickly after that. So definitely wouldn't be shocked. It's kind of like what they were saying that Chris Underwood did, that he had to lose that first individual immunity challenge. So again, I'm curious to see what's up with Tyson, but him really just like shutting up and not doing anything was fantastic.
It's fantastic. And he's just
It's because he's soft. It's because he's a dad.
He's soft because he's a dad. That was so funny.
So
I love that.
Good.
He keeps bringing up those little things that are so not Tyson. Like even him crying before the challenge or kind of, you know, like losing it before the challenge. It's so funny. And then like him questioning, can I actually compete with these guys? Have the new school players advanced this game so far? It's like, he doesn't believe any of that shit. Tyson believes he's the smartest guy in the world. He's feeding Survivor these like winner quotes in case he does come back and win it to be like, yeah, look, I have a heart and I have a soft side, which he does definitely have. But Tyson also believes that he's the best player out there on the island. And there's no doubt about that. He believes that he can wipe the floor with any of those new school players.
Yeah. And you see, again, at the Merge Feast when it's like open forum instead of side conversations. Everyone's like, it wasn't really intentional that the old schoolers are all gone. Like, isn't that really something? But I'm glad that they talked about it a lot because it's just so obvious that it's not something that can really be hidden.
Yeah, and somebody actually put out the tweet of Sandra with the, I don't know about that, because they did get rid of all them. And I know everybody keeps saying, well, is Natalie Anderson really considered old school? Natalie Anderson's not old school, but every old school player, every pre-season 20 player was on edge of extinction. That's insane. Like that's crazy.
And Natalie is gone because her best friend was on a tribe with her. So that's like, that's going to be the anomaly. Hey, we got to talk to Danny. You know, she's still there.
Danny is still there. I actually, Danny was really in that challenge.
Yeah, she did. She's getting challenges.
She is. And I think, like, not that she's maybe going to win her way back, but I think it's funny how, like, these old school players, like, they're still really good at these types of challenges because, like, even though you didn't have puzzles and everything necessarily in all of your challenges, like, these are those random old person backyard games that really anybody can do or, like, that they have done on their season before. Dig a hole and walk across the cargo net and use the pole to escape. I remember this is when Matt Elrod defeated Francesca, right? I think that was the first thing. Matt defeated Francesca using that escape out of the pen in Redemption Island. So, you know, these old school players, they've seen a lot of these challenges or a lot of the elements from these challenges before.
Mm-hmm. I'm just impressed that you knew a Redemption Island fact like that.
Somebody actually asked in the chat before, and I don't know where it is, but I don't know who said it, but what do you like more, the Edge of Extinction challenge or the Redemption Island challenge?
I prefer Redemption Island.
So do I.
I do. And that's not the anti-recency bias. Yeah, you don't just sit there. Redemption Island, you still come in really late, but you have to do a lot more.
Yeah, still, like, Ozzy had to win how many challenges to get back in South Pacific? Like, it wasn't just, oh, I can sit here and finish. Like, everybody who lost here would have technically lost to Tyson in order to get to this point. They'd all be out of the game, and Tyson would be the only one left.
And no, there weren't any advantages on Redemption Island.
That's also true. Right? That is also true. Right. I don't think there were. Were there?
In Blood versus Water, then you could like give idols to people, but no one, you remember they were burning all the idol clues.
That's true. That's true. Because they started that where it was give it to Brad Culpepper, give it to Monica, and then they just burned it and that pissed off.
It was great.
Amazing. I really do think that was amazing. Who have we not talked about much here tonight? Who's kind of flying? Sarah, really quiet tonight.
Yeah, no Cops Are Us. Yeah, the thing with the Merge episode is that it's such a hot disaster that the people who aren't the ones getting voted for are kind of just like, all right, who do I hit? Like this ended up being a pretty much consensus boot. So, you know, Sarah, Kim, Sophie, Denise, like Adam, they're all kind of just like, all right, yeah, we'll vote for Wendell. I'm sure there was so much more to it than that, but because their names weren't getting thrown around, it kind of didn't really matter.
Yeah, and we're down to 11 people here. And the Merge is always a big episode because a lot of the time, you know, the winner's edit is big in the Merge, or they have a big role in the Merge. And that's not necessarily always the case, but that is something that happens often in Survivor. So when you sit down and you look at this episode, Michelle did nothing tonight. You know, Sarah, not really anything. Sophie, huge episode. Jeremy, huge episode. Tony, huge episode. How much value are you putting on this moving forward that the winner of this season was very focal tonight?
I candidly, don't really know how much there is a correlation between, like, the winner and having a big episode in the Merge. I'm sure it is large. I'm sure you're right. But, I mean, I think at this point, if Sophie or Tony wins, I'm not surprised.
But I'm just not surprised because they're playing great. It's not really
because they're playing really good games.
Yeah.
And you know, for what it's worth, the one person who said that Sophie's playing is now gone. So huge for her. I think her, she and Tony had super different emphasis because Tony's was very strategy heavy. Tony, we're not really going to get too much emotional content out of, except for him not being able to buy bubblegum. But Sophie, we see her just, it was so good. We see her just like having a meltdown at the beginning of that challenge. And that, you know, that's something my parents were saying too. They were like, I feel like playing, the worst thing about playing Survivor is the rain. And we actually talked about that in our Q&A podcast last week. But man, that rain looks terrible. And so Sophie is just like not doing well. She's got Michelle and Sarah taking care of her. And then gets back to the beach and like just turns the boat on Wendell. I think Sophie's the MVP this week.
Yeah, I think Sophie's the MVP this week too. Jeremy is going to be a lot of people's vote probably just because he was so vocal. But Jeremy didn't decide who went home tonight.
He didn't get what he wanted.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, look, I love Jeremy's strategy of let's get rid of Nick so Wendell needs to rely on me. I thought that was a great strategy. I thought that was a great – I love their tickle fight. That was really cute and adorable. I'm glad to see Wendell smiling and laughing rather than beating up puppies and kicking like hamsters and shit, you know. So
yeah, but no, kicking Michelle. He just kicks her.
He just kicks Michelle. That's what it is. No, he just screams at Michelle relentlessly. But I don't know. Like I think it has to be Sophie because Sophie also like for somebody who was freezing and all that. And by the way, I love a good rainstorm in Survivor. There's nothing better to me than when they're miserable. Like make them miserable, keep them miserable,
ruin them. Awesome.
Yeah, ruin them. And you know, for her to go up there, and she still hung in there pretty long in the challenge. But, yeah, it seemed like she was the one who wanted it to be – he's not kicking on Michelle. He's kicking Michelle. I love that. Jonah Presser, thank you for that. I feel like Sophie is very quietly completely in control. Now, I could worry that she maybe pulls something like a Sierra Dawn Thomas in Game Changers where it was quiet and then suddenly became too loud and then she goes home and somebody else from her alliance continues on. But, I mean, what she did tonight, like, she spun that and then she's standing there talking to Adam telling her, you should be safe, feel safe, feel safe, feel safe. And Adam buys it and though he's a little worried, Sophie builds trust with Adam there. And she's doing a great job of building trust with people that she doesn't necessarily want to play with. She's building trust with Adam. She already built trust with Kim earlier in the season. And she doesn't really give a shit if they trust her. She doesn't really care about them at all.
No. It's really impressive because she and Adam were not really aligned on Yara. It's one of those things where probably similar to Selle. They were probably closer than what we were shown. But and then even at Tribal Council, she's reassuring him too. Because, you know, they're talking to Jeff and they're giving Jeff absolutely nothing. They're just giving him analogies and they're talking themselves in circles. But it was Sophie who said, you know, you don't need to be in every single conversation. Sometimes it's a good thing to be out of the loop. And I feel like she was directly talking to Adam with that.
Yeah, I absolutely think. I think you're right. I think you're right. And also, what do you think was with Ben's reaction to Adam asking the question? Because that wasn't an editing trick. Adam went up to him and Ben was like legitimately frustrated.
I think so. I have been Ben in this situation. It's kind of like when you're it's and this is like not a knock on Adam, but it's just like when someone's up your butt about something and you just either don't care or don't have the answer, it's like, okay, like leave me the F alone. Mm-hmm. To me, that was what Ben's reaction was because I have had that reaction and it's just like, I don't know. I haven't known, leave me alone. That was how I saw that. And I think the two of them have a big brother, little brother thing where they've been tied together for so long, but they don't really want to be. Yeah. So it's just going to be tension there. What do you think?
I just thought it was bad from Ben. I mean, even because even if you're super annoyed by Adam, if somebody who you're supposed to be aligned with, huge air quotes there, but if somebody you're coming off that tribe of four, he feels good with Sophie, he's trying to work with Sarah and you. If he comes up to you and he says, hey man, how am I doing? Am I in danger? Like really close to tribal? Because this was definitely close to tribal. You can't lose it like that. Like you can't.
Yeah, it wasn't. No, it was. It wasn't good, but it was that. That's what it was. Yeah. But that's the difference between Ben and Sophie. I mean, Sophie probably reassured Adam 30 times that day, and never Sophie has nothing but patience.
And for somebody who absolutely loves Adam and would love to see him win this season, I think Sophie's going to end up reassuring Adam one more time or two more times. And eventually on one of those times she reassures him, Adam's going to be walking down that pathway.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just think it's going to happen because he's just going to eat it up. Also, another little fun fact, Alexa, I wanted to mention this when we talked about the challenge. I realized why we've never played Survivor. We have pretty normal looking toes. Our toes aren't repulsive. What is with the toes on the people who have won Survivor?
I think there's some, there's something so gross about nothing wrong with feet or people who are down to feet. Like, there's something that, like, the cameramen love about just, like, do you know what I want to focus on? A big toe. Like, toes are just always, like, so gross on TV. And it's probably, like, one of the grossest part of their bodies because it's just all dirt there. But I don't know where they – where are their feet, like, peeling? Like, how did that happen? I guess just from tripping over. Also, that I just, like, got ahead of myself there. I was about to say tripping over firewood. Can we talk about the guys going to get wood, which is obviously talk for, like, strategizing, and then Ben just, like, falls over?
he swung down the thing to jump on it and fell.
I love Ben. He is so he's such a hot mess, and it's so fun. I'm loving Ben. He's so good.
I love Ben. Ben's phenomenal television. Phenomenal.
Wait, I saw what you just retweeted from Mike Bloom, where Sarah said, last time I played like a cop, then I played like a criminal. Now I'm playing like a bowl of spaghetti. Did you say
that was a great confessional, actually. I forgot that Sarah had that first, though. I want to.
What did she say?
Nick only has 9 toes. I just need to say that first, because whatever that one toe was, that thing is disgusting.
That's a boil.
Bloody and, like, chopped up. That thing was ready to fall.
Yeah, Nick, you need to talk to Dr. Joe about that.
Exactly. We'll do a toe replacement or whatever. But she did the confessional about the lines aren't being drawn and everything's like a bowl of spaghetti and you don't know where it comes out on the other side. And I thought
fantastic analogy.
I thought that was great. I've never really heard anything like that. That was really the only thing she did tonight. So she did get more screen time than I thought. I just completely forgot that she had that confession.
Now I'm playing like a bowl of spaghetti. No, you can tell. You can tell this is a group of winners because the amount of analogies that came out of tonight, it was like Jeff's dream.
Yeah, yeah.
We had the bowl of spaghetti. We had the sparring. We had a lot going on.
Yeah, we're just sparring. We're just trying to test our reach. Is that what it was? I love that. But yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. So, like, if you're going into next week, Wendell just went home. So, technically, one of the big threats went home, which also, great tweet. I think it came from Wiggler, where he said, how come the women or the men are only considering other men to be big threats? Like, have they learned nothing from Survivor?
Exactly.
Have they learned nothing? But Wendell, one of the big threats, goes home. So, now we're down to 11 players in the game. We know we're not going to get anybody back to, like, final six, so we have a little bit of time. Who would you, and this is not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but who would you see kind of going home next week, and which alliances do you think are actually real right now? Like, what do you think coming out of this merge is real?
I have no idea. Real quick, because I want to comment on that, because that was something that, I've seen in my family. Like, they all, like, what is the criteria for being a threat on this season? Because to me, at the moment, Wendell wasn't a big threat. It seemed like nobody was down with working with Wendell. So is it just like being a big muscular guy? Or I think it was either Tony or Ben who said, like, it's kind of like the spotlight. Or maybe it's my mom who said that. I can't even remember. But, like,
no, I think it was one of them who said it's like the spotlight. And I think that's...
Yeah, like Denise really doesn't have the spotlight. But, like, is Kim not a threat anymore because Kim's been really quiet? I don't know.
And that's what's mind-blowing to me is if you really think about it, Ben and Wendell, they're both a shit ton taller than I am, and they're both, like, you know, way bigger guys than I'll ever be, and they're way bigger guys than Adam will ever be. But does that mean that they're good Survivor players? I'm not saying they're not.
Yeah, but it's just weird.
It's just weird. Like, since when is that what suddenly makes you a threat? Because Sandra Diaz-Twine being an out of shape, you know, slightly overweight,
angry,
like, mom, goes out there and wins Survivor twice. You know what I mean? And, like, she wins twice without being – she doesn't have a muscle on her. She didn't need one. She just won twice. So, like, why are these the threats?
Look at your first 4 winners of Survivor. They could not be more different.
Yeah.
So
your first 6 winners of Survivor.
Jenna.
And Sandra was season 7 and Amber was season 8. I mean, it's insane. Those first however many seasons,
mm-hmm.
it's – open up your eyes here. There's one, if you really think about it, in the first 9 seasons of Survivor, in the first 9 seasons, one athletic person won Survivor. And I'm talking athletic from the standpoint of they're going to be a big challenge, so they're going to do all this. And I know Jenna Maraska won challenges, and I know all that. But I'm talking like if you saw them at the merge and you didn't know a thing about them, you would say, holy shit, that person could beat me in a challenge. There's one in the first 9 seasons. One. And that's mm-hmm. Ethan's on. Because even Brian Heidick's not like a big muscular. So I thought this was a really weird description of why they were big. And it's weird to me too, because if I'm going out there, I'm not considering Ben to be a big threat, no matter how big he is or how many idols he finds. I'm still considering him to be one of the Adam, Nick type threats. And that's not a knock really on Ben. That's just the way he played the game. So it's surprising to me that he was being lumped into the big threat category when in reality he should be working with the smaller threats and just be the biggest threat out of the small threats and win the game.
I think maybe it could, again, it could have to do with the like kind of showy game. Like obviously that's how Tony won and Ben ended up winning with all of these idols. So maybe that's how they're categorizing it, but I'm really curious to see if that continues to hold weight. But to answer your question, I think the only person who is safe for a really long time is Sarah. And again, we see Sarah having a great moment with her and Nick in this preview where she's like, oh no, you're dead now. Like once he throws her name out, I don't even know if it's, that was an editing trick or not, but Sarah's got Sophie and Tony. And I think Sophie and Tony can, I think out of the three of those, that's your winner. But what I'm not seeing is everyone's connected to Sarah. Are Sophie and Tony working together? I'm sure by default, but we're not really seeing that. So I think that group of three is real. I think Jeremy, I think, is a free agent. Like, I think Jeremy will work with Ben, but I mean, I think Jeremy and Ben are together.
I think Jeremy's going to end up working with Tony, too. I do think that's something that really goes through this game because they were together on that other tribe, and Tony believed that Jeremy was with him then, even though Jeremy really wasn't. So I think that they're going to work together for a little bit.
Yeah, but again, with the merge, it's just so confusing. So I'm really curious to see how next week goes. But I think Nick's in trouble, but I think Michelle's been in this position before. Michelle can bounce back.
Well, and you know, to bring the podcast full circle, as one does, what I'm going to be most curious about next week, and I'm not kidding about this, and this is not just because I'm a stan and a troll and just annoying. This is complete truth. I'm most curious to see what Michelle's storyline is now. Because mm-hmm. we saw her in the first episode get really nothing. She really didn't get much at all. She got a little bit here and there, but not really anything. But after she was wrong in that first vote off and Natalie went home and she was on the wrong side, immediately after that we heard, I feel like I have something to prove. I need to change this. And her story began. Mm-hmm. And then her story continued on and it became the Wendell and her thing. Well, now Wendell is gone. And in the episode where Wendell goes home and Michelle still votes with Wendell, whether she actually knew what was going on or not, she votes with Wendell and he goes home. That storyline ends and we hear nothing from her as that storyline is ending. So it's going to be like next week. People always are asking me, you think Phil, like, can Michelle win? Can Michelle win? It's going to depend completely on next week. 100%, it's going to depend on next week because her first storyline ended a while ago, and now her second storyline ended. And last time we saw her bounce back immediately. Is she going to bounce back again? Is this going to be a, I just got my token from Wendell, and he thought that, you know, like if her first confessional next week is, I got a token from Wendell because I voted with him, but I knew the entire time that he was going home. Boom, Michelle is golden, and there's nothing to worry about. But if she doesn't get any confessional next week, despite getting a fire token and Wendell, her biggest adversary, going home, well, then all of a sudden be like, eh, this ain't looking too good.
And she's in trouble. Yeah. I think this week is not a great tell because, again, the attention's always just going to be on who's going home and who's deciding that they go home during the merge.
Yeah. And Jeremy was the star of tonight. Jeremy, Tony, Adam. Those are your stars of the episode, really. And Sophie. Sophie was phenomenal. Sophie's always phenomenal. Yeah. I don't know what. I want to rewatch South Pacific now just to see what I missed the first time and see where they could have added in more of this absolutely fantastic Sophie.
You didn't miss much because they give you nothing on her. They give you so little. It's so disappointing.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. Even she's her great. Reaction to Yul being the one who voted out, nobody else really reacting, her just being so shocked and looking around and not seeing anybody else shocked and just being like, okay.
Like, okay, there goes my best friend.
Whoopsies. Yeah, I don't know. So you were saying Sophie for MVP. I kind of agree with that. I think Sophie was the one who quietly, and again, like, I made this comparison. I think it was kind of lost in that. But, like, I always like people, it'll be like, everybody loves Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, obviously, in the spotlight because he had the coronavirus and, like, now he's recovered from it and all that. But Tom Hanks, everybody loves Tom Hanks. He's in everybody's favorite movies. And then it's like, what's your favorite Tom Hanks, like, performance? And everybody will be like, Forrest Gump, because it's so showy. But then there could be other better Tom Hanks performances where it's not as showy. It's a little bit more subtle. Don't get lost in the Forrest Gump performance here. You know, like, don't get lost in it. I'm not, like, I just don't get lost in the really showy, over the top, what Jeremy had to do tonight, or what Tony has to do, or what everybody has to do. Like, look at what Sophie had to do and how subtle it was, and how she was able to just navigate and twist that entire thing and get it to go from Nick's going home to, hey, we could vote Adam, to now we're going to vote out Wendell. That's an insane ability, and it's so subtle, and it's so hard to show on TV, and it's something that Tommy was phenomenal at in his first season, and we didn't get to really see last season. It's something that the editors of Survivor have never really figured out how to edit, and I don't think that's a knock on them. It's just an impossible thing to figure out how to edit. Sophie, I think, has to be MVP for this week.
Yeah, I think it's definitely Sophie, and you're right, because it is so subtle, and Sophie's, you know, she did tell us exactly what she was doing, but it's all in conversation. It's not like Jeremy, who was like, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this. Here's exactly what I want. So yeah. Sophie had a great episode. And I'm glad she put clothes on because she looked so cold.
Yeah, I know. And then she suddenly had sweats because they didn't want her to get hypothermia and die.
Yeah, that would have been problematic. But yeah, good merge episode. Super curious to see what's going to come out of it.
I know. That was awesome. It made me feel alive again. It just, like, the excitement of Tyson beating Rob by that much was just epic and such a great start to an episode. And couldn't love it any more than I loved it. Like, just phenomenal, phenomenal. I'm also pumped. I mean, you know, the fact of, and this we didn't really talk about, everybody kind of knows, like, not a huge Boston Rob fan. You know, just think he's overrated. I'm a huge Tyson fan. And I've always been a huge Tyson fan. And Tyson and Coach's dynamic in their first two seasons together is, like, one of my favorite things. I think he delivers nothing but gold. And for him to get back in and have that, like visceral reaction, just turn, like, animalistic.
Scream.
That roar when he got – it was just – epic. Like, I mean, I got chills. I'm not joking. Like,
it was awesome.
Chills watching that. And I'm just happy for him. And, you know, I mean, really, if you think about it, you know, we could look at Survivor when all is said and done, and who knows when that will be, because, hey, they're still casting. It could be you.
But we'll be filming in the spring of 2030.
Yeah, I know, right? But you know, it is, when you look at, oh, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, when you look at, like, the over season to season arcs of characters, Jerry Manthey is the best one, I believe, out of any character on Survivor. Like, I'm watching Australia right now, and yeah, she's not a villain by today's standards, but man, is she an instigator. Like, man, is she kind of just obnoxious. And then in All Stars, we all know what happens. And then for her to come back in Heroes, Villains, and essentially be the last hero standing is epic. And that's awesome. But Tyson's arc goes from being the smart-ass little whatever the hell he was to being the asshole who votes himself out because of hot dogs, to winning it for his girlfriend, to now winning his way back into the game for his family and being a fan. It's just... it's freaking awesome to watch. And I love Tyson. I think his arc, whether he goes far or ends up being the first person in the history of Survivor to return from the edge of extinction and be voted off again, whether that happens, you know,
never happened.
I'm happy for him. I'm just happy that he got back in, and I'm glad that he's able to still learn from prior mistakes. And I don't think he's going next week. I really don't. I don't think he's going to be in danger until everybody sits down, unless the sleepers, the hyenas, are able to get the numbers really on their side and then say, let's go to Tyson because he's going to win immunities or something. I think he could be in final eight or final nine, because he's not going to win. You just got to worry about him getting second place. That's really it.
Yeah, I think Tyson's on trouble until he wins an individual immunity challenge.
Yeah, I agree.
That's probably it.
I completely agree. So,
yeah.
All right, what else you got? Or you want to take this home? We're at an hour, so.
Yeah, no, that I think that's all I got. And for once, we actually planned ahead, and we already have our predictions and power rankings guest. I think we're still working out the time, but it's going to be on Sunday. We're going to be joined by James Lim from Ghost Island. We are super excited to talk to him. We were chit-chatting about how bored we are during quarantine, and next thing we knew, we had him on. So it's going to be really good to talk to him. We even talked to James in about, it was a year ago, I think like a year and a half ago, last summer. So tune into that. It'll probably be Sunday night-ish, I think we're going to do, but we'll figure that out. In the meantime, it is April. So for those of you who are patrons or anybody, send us some questions for our April Q&A for our $5 and up patrons. If you have any ideas for what we should do for our retrospective, for our $10 and up patrons, definitely let us know. We just did a Survivor Alliance bracket, which was super fun, and we want to keep that momentum going. Go to patreon.com/survivorspecialist to become a patron. Buy some merchandise. We still have not gotten paid for that, so we're working on that. Follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Stay inside, wash your hands. We're going to get through this, and we will see you guys this weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,